Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to PODNUTS Daily, episode number 454, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Halish. I'm joined today by Josh McClure from yourpcmagician.com. How are you doing, Josh?
I'm great, Jeff. It's an honor to be on the show.
Well, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule and actually coming on the show to share with us today. That really means a lot to everybody that listens to the show, and I'm sure we'll get a lot out of it. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about maybe how you got started in computer repair and where you started off from there?
Sure. I was actually working full time at a local church here in Virginia, and I was the media and tech director. So that kind of got me started off in the tech world. I started off in the media heavy type work, and I actually went to film school to now become a computer technician, which is kind of odd. But I went to film school and started doing the media video work and a little bit of audio here and there. And part of the job there was obviously the tech director. So I maintained the office computers that we had about 9 or 10 users, and I maintained the laptops. It was a Mac office, all Macs.
Nice.
I'm still a Mac guy to this day. I'm actually talking to you on a MacBook Pro right now. So I'm a Mac guy through and through with, you know, the iPhones and the iPads. But the whole office was Mac. So that's where I got my start.
Yeah, we'll forgive you for right now.
Well, you know, I like to say that's the PCs that keep me in business.
True.
Which is completely true. 5% of my business may be Macs. But that's where I got my start. And there was plenty of work to go around there at the church, and I maintained their network and got into a little bit of networking. That's where I, you know, first did some of the Ubiquiti access points. I deployed a system there with those, which those are awesome devices. If anybody is looking for access points, I love the Ubiquiti system. So I put those in there and just kind of learned through trial and error, and then kind of shifted my mindset. I started just diving into the tech world and learning about computers and even PCs. And I'll be honest, I went into this not knowing much about PCs because I was all in the Mac environment.
And you were one of those.
Yes. I had zero basis on like Windows servers. I knew nothing about Windows servers and think like concepts like group policy and DHCP and DNS. I knew none of that stuff. And I knew that if I wanted to go into this full time, I would have to learn those things. And so I actually had a friend of mine that we went to this church together, and he owns a MSP here in Virginia, CP Technology Group. Shout out to them.
Okay.
And he brought me on as a part-time engineer, and I'm actually still working for him here and there doing odd jobs. But they do medical facilities, and they do servers and big, you know, big jobs that much bigger than I'd ever gotten into. So I got some experience working with Steve over at CP Technology Group, and he's been gracious enough to give me the work to go out and learn these kind of things. And he's given me the freedom to mess up some things and, you know, just learn through experience. So that's been great. I ended up leaving my full-time job and went full-time into this business about a year and a half ago, and it's been going great ever since. So
nice.
That's the long-winded, history of how I got started.
Oh, that's a great history, because I'll tell you, I think a lot of people start off similarly in their businesses. Back when I remember, it's funny, what I'm doing now, I'm talking in audio format. We do a video show every week live. And back when I was in high school, I used to do, not only did I do production as far as acting and singing and all that kind of stuff in the high school plays and musicals, but I also did sound and lighting for the dance groups and different things like that. And it's funny because all the things I learned back then, yeah, I really don't remember for even the stuff that I do nowadays. But there was enough interest there where I kind of had a basis for what I really kind of like to do. And so, you know, going past that and getting into technology now, I think we all kind of start with that, you know, hands-on type of situation where we're able to do some things that we enjoy and learn from. And that's great that you were also able to have a person that was able to help you get started in this business and do some of the different things that you might not have had access to, or you might have had to learn the hard way on your own without that backup.
Absolutely. And I mean, that could have been a very costly mistake, because at this point I've already deployed, I'm still in my infancy. I've deployed 2 server and workstation environments in 2 different businesses here in the area. And I've called on this guy who, Steve, I've called on him. Actually, I had to call him last week because I just had a server installation and I had some group policy questions. So I had a resource and I gave him a call, and he was able to, he actually remotely logged in right then and there, extremely helpful to me. And, you know, he was able to talk me through some of the issues that I was having. And I still, you know, I still consider him a consultant with my business, even though we're kind of in the same industry. I'm not competing with him. I will never reach his level, I don't think, of where he's at. Maybe I will, but we have a great relationship with his consultancy and me working part-time for him. So it is a great resource. Anybody out there, I would highly recommend, if you're just getting started, maybe you have a friend or you could get in with somebody who is a step above you, you know, and swallow your pride a little bit, work for them a little bit, and just take wisdom from that person who's been there and done that. It has been extremely helpful for me.
Absolutely. That's great advice. Yeah. Not everything is a competition, as a lot of people will figure out in this business. There is plenty of work to go around.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Yeah. And I don't want to stay on this too long, but, he focuses on the MSPs for larger organizations and, healthcare industries, and he does not do residential. So that's where our relationship kind of worked out, because he would give me residential clients that would call him that knew he was a tech person, and he didn't have the time of day to do that. So he gave those clients to me, and that's where I got my start with some of the residential clients that I still have today.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah. All right. So now, where are you based out of?
We are in Richmond, Virginia, just south of Richmond, in Chesterfield County. So it's a large county, large area, and plus I have the city, Richmond, the capital. And so there's obviously a lot of people there. So plenty of business in the area. It's a great area to have a business and a great area for a small business.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Okay. So now we talked a little bit about you're a Mac guy, but you work on PCs. Now you're working on servers.
Yes.
So, I mean, what other things do you do in your business that kind of, you know, because you're out on your own now. So what types of things do you have going on in there?
I would say about, I am moving more to the MSP type work, managed services. A lot of my clients come in as a break fix client. They either hear about me from a friend of theirs or have seen my advertisements on Facebook. And so they contact me and they just need something fixed, like, a virus, something simple, or even a phone repair. I do phone screen repairs as well, which has been pretty profitable, and everybody has a broken phone, it seems. But, so a lot of my clients come in as break fix, and then I transition them, if I can, over to a managed service, client. And I've been pretty successful at that. So we're doing a lot of MSP work with Max Focus. That's the platform that we use for monitoring and maintaining computers. And we're doing, like I said, the managed services, the computer repair, break fix type things, phone repairs. And we also dive a little bit into web design. So we're pretty, our business is pretty, we have a lot of services that we can offer. And it's just me, but, we're doing all right. And yeah, so that's pretty much everything that we do.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's great. Yeah. So fixing computers, repairing phones, there's certain things that, and doing websites, Yeah. Two of those, which I won't do, but that's only by choice. No, I know there's, if I were to walk by 100 people, I would say that 70 of those people have cracked screens on their phones.
Absolutely. I see them everywhere, and I just want to hand out my business card everywhere that I go, except the fact that I spend a lot of my time in the tech stores, like the big boxes, so I'm not allowed to do that.
Gotcha.
Anyways, I wish I could. And I look around, and I'm like, I see some of these other companies that charge to do that, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you're so expensive. I can do this for so much less, and it's not like I'm underselling myself. At least I don't think so. But I mean, I get the parts fairly inexpensive, and you know, it takes me no time. I've done so many of them, it takes me no time. So it is profitable for me to do that.
Yeah, that's the number one thing, is you have to, anything you do over and over again is going to be beneficial to knowing how to do it and getting through all the shortcuts and different things that you know you need to do. Now, are you doing mostly iPhones, or are you doing some Samsung phones? Where do you draw the line at?
We are only iPhones.
Okay.
And we don't even do the newest ones, like the 6S and the 6S Plus, because you cannot get the parts for those.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I looked online at some of my vendors, and the 6S, 6S Plus screens are about $350. I mean, my gosh, they are expensive, and Apple Store actually does it for less than that. So I can't compete with that.
No kidding. Okay.
Yeah, definitely. And so I'm strictly iPhone, and you know, people even bring me their iPods. I can do iPods.
I just threw up in my mouth. Sorry.
They are a pain in the butt. I hate doing them, and I've even outsourced them sometimes to another company that does it. And then iPads also are the bane of my existence. I cannot stand iPads either, but I can do them.
So, now, let me ask you a question, because this is where, this is the conundrum that I'm coming under right now, is as I am recommending a lot of laptops to my customers, whatever it might be, a lot of these things are actually coming down to where they are. Basically, a lot of them are touchscreens.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done the touchscreen replacement, not the actual screen that's underneath the glass, but the actual glass itself. And to be honest with you, it takes you so much time, not only to pull the screen off, but to dig all the little shards of glass out to make sure that there's no bent corners or anything like that, that when you put in the new screen, they're going, you know, it's gonna break it or crack it again, or do something stupid like I did, where I would basically push the glue onto the LCD screen and pulled the top of it off, had to replace the whole screen. So, I'm just wondering where these things are going, because I don't know that, you know, screen replacements, in my opinion, for a laptop are very profitable for me, because it literally, from time of taking apart, looking at it, and ordering the part and putting it back together, it's like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And to do those screen repairs is so simple, so easy. I've got a couple good vendors. I can usually get a screen within a couple days. I've even played around with having some of the generic screens on hand, but for the most part, people are fine with a couple days of me having their laptop. But I'm just wondering where we're going to go with everything going to these touch screens, and what are we going to do? Because I look at some of the older, like the Asus, not netbooks. What do they call those? The higher end machine.
I know what you're talking about.
Anyways, those types of machines, a lot of times it's actually cheaper to get the whole top end of that laptop with a screen versus just the screen, because the screen's the same price, and you don't have to mess with the glue or anything. You basically you're swapping out two screws and a cable, and that's it. And so I'm wondering if we're going to get to a point where some of these laptops are basically going to go to a point where we're just replacing the whole top end versus actually digging the glass out and digging the screen out and hopefully getting some 3M sticky tape or whatever to hold that back together.
Right. That might be the case, because if you look at the mobile devices, a lot of times the LCDs are fused to the digitizer, which is the touchscreen part. That goes way back to the iPhone. I mean, the earliest ones that I've ever worked on is the iPhone 4. And even back then, the LCDs are fused to the digitizer. So with laptops, we can cross our fingers and hope that they do that, because that does prevent us from having to go there and take the glass off and re-adhere them. And we can literally just pop a couple screws out and pop a new screen in there. So, you know, maybe we can cross our fingers there and hope that that happens, but we'll see. And actually, that brings me to something that I did a couple weeks ago. It was a screen replacement for a touchscreen Toshiba, believe it or not. And this touchscreen was not glued. It was actually held down with little clips around the edge of the screen.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was almost, this laptop is less than a year old, so I guess Toshiba might be going more towards this and staying away from the glue, like a lot of manufacturers are. But maybe, you know, if you're a tech listening and you have a client that needs a screen replacement and you just turn away all touchscreen laptops, I might would recommend at least figure out which model laptop they have and see what the process is, because this ended up being a profitable job for me. And I didn't turn it away like I normally would with a touchscreen like that, because I know that they're a pain in the butt. So yeah, the new Toshibas, they did not have adhesive.
Nice.
It was an easy fix.
Now, if we can just get Apple to do the same thing, then no.
Well, if they would come out with a touchscreen laptop to begin with.
Well, yeah. I'm even thinking, you know, the tablets and stuff like that. I'm looking at things and I go, yes, I understand they're glued at a factory and, you know, the adhesive they use is going to be top notch and it's going to hold that thing in place. But they also know that a lot of people drop these devices and it's like they just want you to almost just replace the device and go, yeah, sorry. Sorry about your luck. It's a $600 piece of a doorstop that you got there.
Right.
And I tell people all the time, I said, listen, if you're going to spend $400, $500, $600 on a tablet, buy a $20 case and put it on there, because that's going to protect these things from happening. For most things, when you just, everybody's going to drop a tablet. It just,
right.
It happens. So I'm hoping that, yeah, these laptops, I'm hoping that they find some sort of basically like a framed in bezel where, yeah, again, you pull off some screws, pop a bezel out, pop the whole system out. Maybe some screws are holding it in place. That'd be great. But I'll definitely check that out, because I don't want to turn those jobs away, because there's so many of them. And I think with the touchscreen laptops, I there's still going to be as many people are dropping them, knocking them off the table, stepping on them, you know, whatever. So
And here's what I did as well. I told my client, I said, this could be a week long repair. You know, it just depends on when I get in there, because to begin with, I'll be honest, I had no idea that this one was not glued in. I thought it was. I figured it was. And so I gave them a longer expectation for when it would be done. And also I gave them prices that reflected if I had to buy a whole new LCD as well. And so that kind of, when I didn't have to buy the LCD because I didn't destroy it in the process, that actually made the client happier. You know, they ended up paying less than they thought they might have paid.
Oh, okay.
And the time was less. I got it done within like 2 days because it was just the digitizer. I pulled the digitizer off, put a new one on. I didn't break anything underneath it. I didn't break the LCD. And so I was able to go to the client faster and cheaper than what they expected. So that was a great lesson that I learned. Don't turn it away. Just get all the information you need and then decide whether or not you can do the job or not.
That's good. Now, what I've found, though, is the digitizers tend to be a little more expensive than the LCD screens that I'm purchasing for the non-touchscreen laptops. Are you finding the same type of thing?
Yes, absolutely. They are a little bit more expensive.
I'm also looking at if I actually have to dig the thing out, I've got to charge more than what I was charging for basically popping four screws and pulling a bezel off and replacing the screen.
Yeah. That's part of the pricing, though, is when I told them, I priced it out, you know, based on how much time I thought it would take to dig out the glass and do the whole job. So versus underselling myself to begin with, I oversold myself. I told them this is going to be quite a bit more than it actually ended up being. So it's all about expectations. You know, right. If you set the expectation, uh, you you know, under promise, over deliver. If you do that, then you're good to go.
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think some of those laptops too, the problem I'm having right now is when I'm looking at it, hopefully this changes a little bit, but you can even get some $300 laptops that actually yeah. have touchscreens. And yes. I'm going, is a person going to want to spend $200 to fix a digitizer on a lot of these cheaper laptops when they only paid $300 some odd for it? You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I know if
it's a hard sell.
I know if it's a $500, $600, $700 laptop. And quite honestly, my price point for laptops when I'm telling customers about what they need to buy, it normally starts at $500.
Oh, absolutely.
If you're not spending
at a minimum.
Yeah. $500 is minimum, best bang for the buck. I'd really rather you get closer to $700, especially if you're going to be mobile with the unit, because again, you're going to drop it.
Yeah, and I mean, these cheap things are made out of plastic mm-hmm. and glue. And, you know, you drop it. In fact, the one that I fixed, the Toshiba that I was just talking about, it fell about a foot off of a bench in their kitchen and shattered the screen. I mean, yeah, so that's okay. What happened to that one. But absolutely, those cheap things are crap. I do not recommend anything under that $500 price point.
Okay.
Just like you.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, man.
It's crazy. So,
now, obviously, you're doing things. You said you've started putting some servers in some businesses and different things, and you're also doing websites for businesses. And we were talking a little bit before the show, and I was talking about how some of these smaller businesses, their websites are horrible. And it's like, why do you even have a website? And, you know, maybe for some of them, it's an important thing, or somebody told them at one point that, hey, you need to have a website. You need to have a web presence. And they're still using their company name at gmail.com or something like that. Are you finding a lot of those?
Tons. Yes. Even businesses that have been around for, you know, 7 years, 6 or 7 years, they're still on. I've had some that are still on AOL.
Oh,
believe it or not, it's the worst. I have the knowledge and I know that it costs nothing to get yourself a domain and some email set up. It costs almost nothing. And for a small business like that, a shared hosting account is all you need. You know, and a lot of these businesses went out there and they bought this GoDaddy special, you know, $5 a month or something. You get a website builder and all that kind of stuff. And
right.
That's all they're doing. And, you know, it's just, in my opinion, it's not the best way to do things, obviously. So, I'm seeing a lot of that. And
I think a lot of them are, you know, the more traditional type businesses where they go, yeah, I was told I needed a web presence, but I don't want to spend a whole lot of money on it. So,
right.
I guess my point is too, is that it's definitely something that's needed out there. So you can not only go in and do a break fix on a computer, maybe get them into the managed services, maybe tweak their website and their email. You've kind of got the whole package built into what you're doing, which I think is great.
And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to be a one-stop shop as much as I can. I obviously can't do everything, but as much as I can, I want to be the go-to person for the tech stuff. If their computer breaks, I want them to call me. If their website needs updated, I want them to call me, because in my opinion, that's just good customer service. I don't want to have to, if it's me, I don't want to have to travel to 10 different stores to pick up, you know, 10 different things. I like going to the mall, for example. It's one stop shop, get everything you need. Or Walmart, you know.
Right.
I like Walmart. One stop shopping. And so that's what I'm trying to make my business for the tech, at least for the tech stuff.
Now, are you doing anything on site, or are you doing mostly on site, or are you having people drop things off, or how you running your business there?
I actually do both. I am probably 70% on site, probably about 30% they bring to me. This is for obviously break fix jobs. So I work out of my home, so I don't really have a store location. And so people sometimes will bring stuff to me. I would prefer to go to them, to be honest with you, because obviously it's my home. You know, this is where I live, and it's just kind of a private area, you know. They can bring stuff to me, but I'd rather go to them and fix their device. But yeah, I'm on site most of the time with people, and I've even met people over at a, you know, a coffee shop to pick up their device, or to even, I've even repaired phones sitting in the coffee shop before. So,
okay,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's, buy a cup of coffee. They'll let you sit there as long as you want.
Nice.
So that's, I've done that before. It's crazy.
See, I'm just the opposite. See, I'm lazy. I don't want to go to see anybody. Let them bring your stuff to me.
Yeah.
But I know, I do understand why a lot of people don't like that. And I get it. Yeah, it is kind of your private domain and right. where you live and where your family is and all that kind of stuff. So
right. And I have no signage up. You know, it's not the image I want to present with my business. I would prefer to have a location. But I know that's a lot of overhead.
Right.
So I haven't gone to there yet. But you know, I don't have signage and it's not a business.
Right.
It's just a little awkward to me to have somebody come into my home office, you know, where I might have dishes in the sink or, you know, stuff like that.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, and all the different places I've lived, I've been able to have people come in, you know, the front door, I've got a dining room table. They basically mm-hmm. sit down, fill out their paperwork, and, you know, I look at their stuff and they go on along their way. It's like, you know, 5 feet into my house and that's pretty much all they see. So,
right.
And they see the big German Shepherd too. So, you know, it's,
they're not going to mess with you.
No. So, but yeah, so, and part of it is because I charge a flat rate, you know, I'm more than willing to actually, I joke about it a lot. I'm more than willing to go out and pick up computers and drop them off. Problem is it's going to cost you more money mm-hmm. than what it is going to cost you to actually bring it to me and pick it back up yourself. You're going to save a significant amount of money because I'm going to do it at a flat rate versus where I've got to, you know, charge for my time and effort in picking things up and, right. and, dropping them off. So, all right. So yeah, I'm looking at your website now. It's very nice, by the way.
Thanks.
And how did you come up with your PC Magician?
That's a good question. A lot of people ask me that. And a lot of times when I go on site, they ask me to do tricks, but I tell them that I charge more for that. So I don't do tricks, just in case you're wondering. But I got the name because when I would go to fix computers or when I would sit down with somebody and show them something, they would repeatedly, this happened more than once, they would repeatedly tell me that it's like magic. Mm. You know, they would call me, they literally would call me the magician, you know, you're magic in what you're doing because they have no idea what is going on. They just see me come in and to them, I'm basically sitting down and touching the computer and it starts working. And so I've been called the magician. So I was like, I can be your PC magician.
Nice.
That's where my name came from.
Okay. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm always curious, you know, because it's very unique. I don't think you're going to have anybody that's copying that and, you know, trying to do the same type of thing. So,
yep. And I like the word your just to me is personal. And that's part of my business. That's part of my slogan is personal tech support and solutions. So I am your PC magician and it works for me. It's been working for me since the beginning.
Nice. No, that's very good. Yeah, I'm all about relationships in this business. You definitely mm-hmm. have to have a good rapport with your customer base because, again, in my opinion, you actually need to kind of like each other.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In order to continue to do that work together, especially if you're doing any type of managed service or anything like that. They've got to trust you. You know, I give people that I'll put my remote software on their computer. I'm logging in one time. I didn't ask them for unattended access. Next thing I know, they give it to me anyways.
Right.
Well, it's just easier for you to have that access. So I can call you up and go, hey, this is messed up or whatever. I can go in and, you know, look at the problem that much quicker versus mm-hmm. them going to my website and downloading my software again and all that kind of stuff. So,
right. You know, and my clients give me that permission for the most part. But every time that I call them or every time that they call, and even if they're a managed care client, which is the name of my managed service, is called Proactive Care. Even if I have that remote access, I still ask them, is it okay if I take control of your computer? It just builds that trust and helps them understand that I'm not sitting there at midnight, sitting on their computer, you know, playing games or doing stuff that, you know, they wouldn't want me doing on their computer. Because I've had some clients kind of balk at the idea and ask me, so you can pretty much get on my computer at any time, right? And I said, well, technically, yes, but I'm not going to. And so every time that they call or I need to get on it to do something, I always ask them, you know, beforehand.
Well, and I always tell my clients too, you know, that is true, but here's the thing. Number one, you're going to see a little banner that is right. floating around. It has my name on it. So this computer is being controlled by Jeff Halish.
Yeah.
Or at the same time, you can also hit a disconnect button and disconnect. Mm-hmm. You know, that's built right into the software that I use, which is Instant House Call. So mm-hmm. for me, that kind of gives them that level of, you know, and even when they give them, when I ask them to give me unattended access, because maybe I need it for a few days or something like that, I have to tell them, you actually have to check the checkbox. Even though I'm already remoted in your machine, I can't check it on this side. It won't work. So you have to check it in order to give me that permission. And once I do that, they have a better understanding of, you know, that they're still in control, but it's just a convenience for them.
So have you ever had a client where they were away from their computer and they call you and say, hey, can you log in real quick and do something? Because I have, and you know, the client wasn't actually there. And with my, you know, with Max Focus, I've got Take Control mm-hmm. turned on. And so I can, you know, one click access to get into their computer and they don't have to be there. How does that work for you? Have you ever run into that where you have to tell them, no, I can't really do anything unless you're there?
If I already have unattended access, no, I can, they don't have to be there.
Okay.
So the unattended access is just a one-time thing when they're signing up. So when they're on there, they check the box and then I can go in at any time and log into their computer, even if they're not there.
So. Okay. So you do have that set up for full-time unattended. Okay.
Yep.
That was my question.
Very good question. Yeah. Cause you know, and everything is a little bit different. So it's actually a good question to bring out, but yeah, it works perfect for me. And there's a lot of times where I'll have to, you know, I'll let a client know. I say, hey, just leave your computer on because I do work a full-time job. And when I come back home after my job, I will log on the computer. I just tell them, hey, leave it on overnight and I'll get to it when I get back and I'll work on their computer while they're sleeping.
Right.
And it's no big deal. By the time they wake up in the morning, their problem's fixed. They're happy. I send them an invoice. They pay me. It's all good.
So. Right.
All right. So what we talked about a lot of things that you do in your business. Now, what are some of your favorite tools, software, hardware wise that you use on a regular basis?
My number one tool is Tekwaru with ReaperTech. I'm a huge fan. That has streamlined my process. You know, it's been incredible since I got on board with Tekwaru and TechUSB. And actually, I know they're getting ready to revamp it with a new code base and all that kind of stuff. So I'm really looking forward to that. I've been using Tekwaru for probably close to 8 months to a year.
Okay.
And it's just made a huge difference. I pretty much ran the tools that the software runs anyways, but to be able to automate it and also do it remotely, I can drop the zip file of Tekwaru onto another computer, run it, and then it sends me the report and I can log back in and delete the program, delete the files that it created and the logs, and I'm back up and running with that computer. So it's helped me do remote work. It's helped me do on-site work. It's been a great tool. That is my number one break-fix tool that I use. And it also helped me diagnose hardware. Obviously with the TechUSB, you can test the memory and the hardware or the hard drive. And it's a huge benefit for the business. So highly recommended Tekwaru, definitely.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, the TechUSB portion is, I use that a lot for a lot of these OEMs, or not, I should say, a lot of the regular computers that don't have the diagnostic tools. A lot of times I actually use the diagnostic tools, whether it's on a Dell, Toshiba, or whatever, and you know, test all that stuff out. But a lot of times there, you know, I might get something that comes back clean even on those, and I might run TechUSB and then it detects something and says, hey, you got a, you know, bad memory here or something like that. And it kind of, it really does help get me in the right direction of what I'm looking at.
Absolutely. And the thing is, I mean, if you learn how to read the logs, it can tell you a lot of stuff. It can tell you more stuff than you want to know. If you learn how to read the logs, you know, then you're great. You're good to go. I want to learn a little bit more about the registry. I don't know too much about the registry. And so that's probably my next step in my business and in my learning. But, and I've noticed a lot of the I mean, Tech Waru will run the registry investigator and can reveal a lot of issues, but if you don't know how to read the log, that's one thing. So that's my next thing. But for anyone out there, learn how to read the logs and learn the registry and learn all that kind of stuff. And the tool will become more valuable to you.
Absolutely. Yeah, it does a lot of different things, that's for sure. And definitely a time saver and help in your business.
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah, some other things that I use. I use, I said this before, Max Focus for my MSP for monitoring and management. I use Freshdesk for tickets. I'm on the free tier for Freshdesk. It's working great for me.
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much the tools that I use.
Freshdesk. Now, what type of? I've heard the name before, but I don't think I've ever used or seen it in action. Does it do like the invoicing and different things like that, like a FreshBooks, or is it a little bit different?
No, Freshdesk is for help desk.
Okay.
It is ticket management. You can trigger emails to go out. You can for my clients, if they call me, I create them a ticket, and it helps me track the progress of the ticket. And if it's overdue, it'll send me an alert, send me an email. And also I can reply to the clients directly in there. It's just a good professional looking communication platform, because they get an email that's nice looking and it's branded, and it even has like a ticket number. So it makes it feel official, and it is official. It's not just that it feels official. but it's, you know, they get that email that's legitimate, and it's not just a text email that I send them from my iPhone that says, hey, your computer's done. It's actually a pre-formatted email, and it looks good, and they can actually log on to a portal themselves and check the progress, and they can see if the ticket's been addressed, they can see if it's been resolved, or if it's still open. So it's actually really cool software. You should check it out sometime. It's really cool.
Okay, sounds good. Sounds very similar to Repair Shopper, which is my invoicing ticketing system of choice that I've been using since June of 2014. And I didn't realize, you know, before everything, I was doing manual paperwork. I had all, you know, proper documents and stuff like that, and had people sign things, and I kept paper copies of everything. And then I'd fill out all this information. But man, when a customer would call me back and I hadn't seen them in 6 months or sometimes even longer, they would go, hey, you remember you worked on? And I'm like, no.
Yep.
To be honest with you, if I worked on your computer last week, chances are I don't remember you.
That's but, right. yep, I've had that.
So it was nice to have a repository where I basically can go log in and basically look at that customer and see exactly what I had done for them. Plus, they get the automated emails and different things on a regular basis. Once the ticket is closed, you know, we do a couple of checkups throughout the year. I think the first one is like 2 weeks, and the second one's 3 months, and then there's a year follow-up after that. Just kind of let them know, hey, is everything still working okay, all that kind of stuff. So some of those key things in just having that information all in one place is phenomenal. It's just, right. It's made my life a lot easier to kind of keep a hold of everything. So,
right.
Now, as far as processes and different things like that, what have you done for that type of thing? Do you kind of just on an as needed basis, or are you kind of creating processes as you've gone along?
Are you asking about the repair process?
Yeah, any of the processes you do in your business, whether you repair, website, whatever.
Yes, I'm a processes nerd.
Okay.
I love processes. I love spread. I love checklists. I have a binder sitting here that I created with my entire diagnostic and repair process, and it tells me exactly what to do when I get the computer in. It says, turn the computer on and run the built-in diagnostics if it has one. And then the next step would be to run Tech USB, you know, with and run the hardware diagnostics, and then boot it all the way up, see what's going on, and then, you know, maybe run the Tech Waru at that time, or, you know, CombiFix or one of the other third parties that Tech Waru doesn't have. And so it is a very strict process. And the reason I'm doing that is because I want to start this business with the mindset of growing and the mindset of me not being down in the weeds. eventually maybe I can grow to be just managing the company, but I have techs working under me doing these processes. And if I have these processes in place, then I will be able to focus on the big picture. And so that's kind of the goal for the future. But yeah, processes are huge in this business. I have processes even for building a website. I use Trello.com for project management, and I have a template of a web design project. And so I copy the template, rename it, and it tells me step one, you're going to build it in Photoshop. Step two, you're going to put the framework together and install WordPress. And it's very detailed. Yeah, processes are huge for me. They've been very helpful for me. And also I can outsource that at that point if it's so detailed, because that gives whoever's working under me, they can't really go out of those boundaries. And that's kind of what I want. Because if I know the process works, that's the process I want to use. And that's what I've been learning. I've been tweaking it a little here and there, but we're pretty good on our repair process and our web design process. We get very few computers that come back because of issues, because we are so thorough.
That's good. That's real good. Yeah. It's one of those things that, I wish I had time to actually yeah. set up my processes, but it is a goal one day to get there. So,
right. Well, you're full time anyways in your other business. So maybe when you make the plunge and jump into this full time, then you'll have the time to make your processes.
Yeah, probably not. But anyways, So here's a free tip for you. So what you do is you take those processes, you actually bundle it together in a package, and you actually sell it to other technicians like myself that can't make our own processes.
There we go. All right. I'm writing that down
there
right now.
There you go.
Give you a call in a week. And
there you go. Just let me know how much it is. And we're all set.
All right.
I think it's great to have processes. I've got check sheets and stuff like that I've gotten from the Technibble computer business kit, and those are great. My problem is I don't pull them out.
helps.
They're printed, and yeah, I don't use them.
Well, for me, I mean, it's all up in my head right now. I usually don't pull it out either, but I do have it just in case.
But you know, but there's a lot of times where there might be certain things that I forget along the way, and I will go, hey, did I check to see if Flash was updated?
Right.
If I don't have that in my process, the problem is I'm constantly second guessing myself. Then I go back and I check, and it takes more time. So a lot of the stuff, even if you think about a virus removal and cleanup, even as good as I think that I am, I still can't do that from start to finish 100% in my head, because I don't remember everything that I've either done or not done, because there's no particular order. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are certain particular orders, but you get several machines going at one time and you don't know where you're at on that machine. So
absolutely. And I have my checklist. They're actually laminated, so I can put one at each computer, and right underneath the computer, I can check off each step. So this computer's at this step and the next one's at this step. And you get on the list. Sometimes I do this again, sometimes I don't, but I have the ability to. So maybe that's something you or somebody else could start doing if you run off a checklist. Not sure who's listening, but if you're a checklist person, maybe you could laminate them and stick them with each computer.
That's a great idea. So you can actually mark them off and then just kind of rub the...
Rub it off, reuse it.
Nice.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a great tip. Okay, so I'm glad we went down that road.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, package it up, put it together, and sell it to other technicians.
I think the tech kit or whatever that kit is that you have has probably already done that. So
there's a lot of great checklists and different things in there that you can use in your business. But yeah, laminating it, that is something I did not think of. So very good. Great tip there. All right. So anything other than that, other software or hardware wise that you use on a regular basis?
Yeah, there's one that I've actually fallen in love with the past couple of weeks. This is a website. It's called youcanbook.me. It's youcanbook.me. This is for scheduling. And this website, I just started doing this a couple weeks ago. And every client that's called me or texted me or emailed me, I've had them go to this website and say, book your appointment. And I tell them it's it's to work with your schedule, and it really is to work with my schedule, to be honest with you. But I say, make an appointment that works best for you. But the truth of the matter is, it integrates with my calendar. It actually integrates with Gmail calendars and iCloud calendars, which is what I use because I'm a Mac person. And it integrates. And so if I have a booking, this website will not allow them to book an appointment at that time. And I can also go and block out times and dates. And, you know, they can only see the times that are available for me to do the job. And so I used to just use my calendar and go out there and take a quick glance when they call and see what I have available and do it that way. But I just decided to make a single page on my website that's just my scheduling calendar, and I send them all there to book their own appointment. And it goes right into my calendar. Once they book it, it sends me an email, sends them an email, and also a iCal link in their email that they can add it to their calendar. And it's just been great. So youcanbook.me has been extremely helpful for me for scheduling appointments. I've loved the software.
Very cool. Yeah, I've gone back and forth on that where I've thought about it and I said, you know, do I want to have a calendar where I can have people? Because, I mean, there's a lot of times where I'm not available and it probably would help in that fact. But I think a lot of times I do a little bit more personal interaction. So, but I'm still, that does intrigue me. Now, I know Repair Shopper's got one actually built into their software mm-hmm. that I can add to my webpage. But I might actually try that at some point and just, you know, hey, try it out, see how it works. Because it might be beneficial to me where I'm not having to try to figure out when I'm available or when I'm not. Because I'm like you. I look at the calendar and I'm like, and I got right. this, that, the other. So that might be work pretty good.
And I can't stand emails going back and forth. You know, hey, how does Monday at 3 work? No, Monday at 3 doesn't work. Right. Let's do Monday at 5. Wait, no, Monday at 5 doesn't work. You know, I just can't stand doing that back and forth. So I said, here, go to this website, yourpcmagician.com/schedule. Make your appointment, and then it works with both of our schedules, and that's it.
Now, are you getting a lot of email or contacts from your website versus actual phone calls?
Right now, I'm actually not getting too much business from my website. I'm getting a little bit.
Okay.
Actually, I just implemented a chat feature, which I've actually gotten a couple clients out of on the website. But most of my business comes from referrals, believe it or not.
Okay.
That's the biggest part of where my business comes from is referrals.
But are people actually calling you or are they emailing you back and forth? Because I'm just trying to figure out if something like this, you know, calendaring on your website would actually work for me. Most of my customers are actually calling me.
I get more calls.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So now Absolutely. Do you still send them to the website to, hey, go ahead and book a time here, or do you just book a time with them while you're on the phone?
Well, I mean, I can log into I still use the software. I still use YouCanBookMe or gotcha. YouCanBook.me. I still use it myself, but I may schedule it with them on the phone. But it just helps me because I have time slots on that website and I don't remember all my time slots sure. in my head. They're an hour and a half time slots. And so I still use the website, but I may schedule them while they're on the phone with me. Yeah.
No, that's good because, so you can actually, you still have access to it and you can see at a glance mm-hmm. what available time you have versus going through, whether it be a Gmail calendar or anything right. or the whatever the iCalendar thing is.
iCal.
Whatever.
Something like that.
Whatever those Mac elites use.
No, that's
good. And that's good that these things actually integrate with, because a lot of people do use, you know, I use Gmail. I use the Google Apps Gmail. So I have my website going, or my domain is used through there. So that kind of works out good for me. All right. Anything other software, hardware that we didn't cover yet?
Oh man, I use a lot. I don't really have much more to, I guess, talk okay. about too much. I mean, little tools here and there. Mile IQ. Mile IQ is an app for your smartphone. It tracks your mileage. That's big. It helped me in 2015 with tax write-off, with my nice. Taxes and stuff. So Mile IQ, I mean, it pays for itself 100 times over. Okay. You know, it's like, I think $5 a month, $5.99 a month, but you can write off so much on your taxes if you use it. So that's huge. MailChimp for for my newsletter and stuff. I don't do my newsletter as often as I should, but I use MailChimp when I can, when I have time, and QuickBooks Online for bookkeeping.
And how do you like QuickBooks Online? And if you, have you ever used the other one, the regular QuickBooks?
I have. I've used both.
Okay.
I went from QuickBooks 2014 to 2015 on the desktop, and then I moved over to QuickBooks Online. And actually, if you're a Costco member, you can get a big discount off of QuickBooks Online. So if you're thinking about moving to QuickBooks Online and listening to this podcast, check your Costco membership because you can get a big discount on the software. So yes, I've loved QuickBooks Online. It's got a great mobile app. I can also accept payments directly through the app with the card reader that I have. So I don't have to accept it through Stripe and then, or accept it through Square and then record the transaction in QuickBooks. It's all just one system for invoicing. Which, speaking of, that's kind of why I've not gone to Repair Shopper, because I know Repair Shopper can do invoicing and stuff, but I didn't want to have two bookkeeping apps. I want to do my invoicing through QuickBooks only and not go through Repair Shopper. Now, I know it integrates. I didn't have time to figure that out. So
right, right.
I didn't use the software to its fullest. That's why I didn't use Repair Shopper in the end. But yeah.
Yeah. So I'm always looking for the one solution that has everything underneath the covers. The one thing I'm still using an Excel spreadsheet for my accounting. So, yeah. So everything else is documented, all the important things. I manually do my spreadsheet. It's whatever. It works for me. I forget a lot of things and have to go back and work on it. So that, I guess that's why I was kind of asking, is I've threatened to go to QuickBooks Online and actually integrate it with Repair Shopper and just kind of use that, because I can see the benefits of that, but it's like anything else. Things take time to set up.
Right.
And so now, as far as setting up between the QuickBooks desktop version and QuickBooks Online, one easier than the other? They're both about the same.
QuickBooks Online is definitely easier.
Okay.
It is not as featured as the desktop version. So if you want features, if you want all the reporting that you can do, which is probably way too much for a normal small business, then use the desktop. But the online version has enough to make it good for my business.
Okay.
Easier, yes, definitely. More user-friendly. You have support if you need it. And a lot of businesses are going to QuickBooks Online, so a lot of accountants know the software as well.
And do you know what the monthly cost for that is?
The normal cost...
I know I've looked it up a couple times, and I can't recall for the...
I can actually look it up right now. I pay definitely less than the normal cost because of my warehouse membership with Costco. So I think I pay about $15 a month.
Okay.
Whereas the package that I have is about $20 a month. For the package that I have, I believe I have the Essentials, which is the mid-tier.
Okay.
That one runs about $20 to $25 a month. But with a warehouse discount, it's quite a bit less.
And what does the middle tier give you versus just the like beginning tier?
It gives you, I think it gives you some more reporting.
Okay.
I've not looked too much into the differences. I just know what it does for me. Now the middle tier doesn't do inventory. I do know that.
Okay.
So if you need inventory, then the middle tier is not going to be for you, but yeah, it does. Okay. So you can pay bills, manage and pay bills with the mid tier. And it looks like they have some more sales and profit reports, but there's really not much else different. They all can sync with your bank account, and they all have the app access, and you can do invoices and estimates and income and expenses with all the different versions.
Okay.
So.
Very good. Very good. All right. So let's go ahead and let's end off with maybe some of your business tips, the things that work for you that maybe we haven't covered thus far.
Sure. Well, one of them for me is to present yourself professionally. You got to put away the jeans and the t-shirt. If you really want those bigger clients, the business clients, small businesses, you really need to put together a professional presentation. And I learned of this just a few weeks ago when I sold a big server workstation system. I put together a little PowerPoint, printed it off for them, and it looked nice. I spent time on it to make sure it looked good. I detailed everything, and then in the end, I summarized everything to where the business owner understood what I was talking about, because there's a lot of technical jargon when it comes to servers and workstations and networking and all that. And the business owner, which was a vet, didn't care about all that stuff. So I just put together a nice professional presentation. I looked professional, and I went in and I just impressed the socks off of them. And it was, you know, I got the sale, so it was great. And you know, it worked for me. So just professionalism is huge. You know, don't try not to wear jeans and t-shirts on site. Yes, I've done that on a Friday, you know, because it's a little more casual with a lot of businesses, but just be professional. And don't skimp on, like, if you're presenting, if you're pitching something, just make sure your presentation looks good. I'm talking like even the PowerPoint that you put together, if you did a PowerPoint, just make sure it looks good. Don't throw it together, and you will impress your clients.
That's good advice. Now, I'm sorry, did you say you use PowerPoint?
Yes, I use PowerPoint. Office 365 for Mac, okay? It works the same. Just, in fact, it probably runs a lot better.
Just checking, you know, because everybody, you know, talks about the Mac one. That's probably something. Now, when you're putting a PowerPoint presentation together, are you using your laptop to show that, or what do you, how you?
I printed it off.
Okay.
It was real simple. I didn't want to bring my laptop to this meeting. I wanted to give them some takeaways.
Okay.
So I wanted to give them physical paper to keep with them. So I printed the presentation out. I just used the software to make the presentation, and then I printed it.
Okay. That's great.
Into a nice stapled, presentation.
Okay.
So.
No, that's great. Yeah, because I was curious, you know, I don't know if people are still doing the power. That makes more sense to me to actually leave something with the customer so that they have something to look at and, you know, even kind of compare notes and stuff like that. So versus just seeing something and going, well, I think he said, and not remembering it.
Here's another tip. I mean, leave behinds are good. So if you're going into a new client and you're just kind of not cold calling, but just visiting them, I guess soliciting might be the word. If you're going into a business randomly and trying to talk to them about what you do, just leave some leave behinds, you know, take a little, you know, cardboard, you know, thick paper, nice feeling thick paper, put some of your services on there. If you're doing a full presentation, leave that with them and leave some business cards. And, you know, that's a good way to get business. Is just leave behinds. Let them see your name everywhere they look.
Nice. All right. Very good.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, it sounds good. I'll tell you what. If I want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing with us today. It's been awesome. A lot of good information that you shared about how you do your business and what's working for you. If people want to find out more about you, and where could they do that at?
You can first check me out on my website. It's yourpcmagician.com. On that website, there's an email form, so you can shoot me an email if you want to get in touch with me or have any questions. You can also call my business, 804-592-6486. And if you call me outside of my business hours, you're going to hear my wife on my voicemail, but I will get back to you as soon as I can. My website, yourpcmagician.com. Go check it out.
Very cool. Well, thank you again. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
All right, you guys can find me on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Halish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show like Josh, email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you guys need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. You too can help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.